This is WGN. Good morning again. This is John Williams. I like to be cheery and up and positive. I like us to laugh and I like us to learn. But today, I'm just thinking, can Illinois suffer any more humiliation? Could we just as a city and state be any more embarrassed? We go through the whole Jussie Smollett thing, think we're done with that. It was ridiculous from the beginning. It's still ridiculous, and we're not done with it. Rod Blagojevich went to jail, and now he's coming back. And that three-ring circus is going to start all over again. And just like Jussie Smollett, he's not going to say, I did anything wrong. He's not going to say, I'm sorry. In fact, you people did me wrong. It's the same playbook, and I'm sick of it. But I'm going to be up and cheery, and I'm going to be laughing and learning a lot with you today. So this will be a swell show. In fact, we'll bookend it with that observation and Blagojevich's press conference. I believe right now he's got some Grecian Formula 44 or something working. A team of people are trying to dye his hair brown. It'll look natural and wavy. And then he'll come out and he'll say, we'll see what. That gaggle of reporters and supporters that were in front of his house was madcap last night. And who's the guy shouting? Do you have the audio of the crowd, Producer Elif, in front of the Blagojevich house when he walked up to his home? I would have kept my head down. I would have come in through the back. I would have made a beeline to my daughters. I don't know where they were, but I would not have paused to shake hands and nod to the crowd.
Back away, legacy media.
That guy, Rod, you are the man. Welcome home, Governor.
Welcome home, man.
Who are those people?
Those are guys from the PGA gallery. Tiger, you're the man. Get in the hole.
Are they the same ones that put up that banner?
Maybe so.
Yeah, and you heard the helicopter there in the background?
Yeah.
That was at 12:30 this morning, by the way. I live in that area.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, very loud.
I mean, so what are we going to learn? I mean, you know, I guess he'll have his due. And listen, we'll be there, so don't... The pot is calling the kettle black here, but the news click yesterday, this is interesting. Our daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. I'll finish this thought, Elif, and then we'll take a break for the forecast and come back to it and just continue to dribble on about how ridiculous this is. Oh, good, John. I'll stay tuned for that. The news click yesterday was President Trump says he has commuted the sentence of Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich. At the time, we didn't actually know that he would be home last night. So you had two options. You could have said, good, 8 years has been long enough, or B, bad, Rod should still be in jail. 53% said he should still be in jail, but 47% of you said that it's good that he is home. We have the problem here that a governor who refuses to admit he did anything wrong was sent to prison, arguably for too long. I always thought he went to jail for too long. And then he's released early, but arguably for the wrong reasons. So you may agree with the ends while not being able to justify the means, and that's what makes this especially frustrating. I'm amazed at how many people are refusing to open packages or are leery about opening packages that have come from China, which is everything. So I better not even go in. Some people are throwing the entire package away. You ordered something from Amazon. It comes from China. It's there in your doorstep. You kick it to the curb. If you need new windows or doors, call the company recommended by Lou Manfredini of House Smarts Radio. Call Gilkey Windows. Gilkey manufactures the highest quality vinyl and fiberglass windows in an endless variety of styles and colors for a limited time. Buy one, get one 50% off, and take $700 off patio and entry doors, or no money down and no interest for 12 months. Call Gilkey, 888-3-GILKEY, or visit Gilkey Windows Showroom in Palatine 7 days a week. Yes, even on Sundays from 10 to 3.
One team keeping an eye on cigarettes. Lourdes Duarte follows city inspectors as they search for secret stashes. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
What's the line from Seinfeld you were thinking about?
Well, it was the one where Jerry tries to beat the lie detector test, and he goes to the one guy he knows that can help him, and that's his buddy George Costanza, who left him with some very great advice.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
So there you go.
Because Blago still thinks that he was the victim here and did nothing wrong. His brother was resolute about that on with Ro Khan yesterday afternoon. Ro had a terrific show. I hope you heard some of that. By the way, Stacey St. Clair at the Tribune did a fact check. She wrote, Trump says The same people who went after him, Comey Fitzgerald Mueller, prosecuted Blago. Comey was the U.S. Attorney, U.S. Deputy Attorney General when the probe into Blago's administration began, but he moved to the private sector in 2005 and played no role in Blago's indictment. Stacey St. Clair is on the line from the Tribune. Hi, Stacey. It's John. Good morning. How are you?
Hi. Good morning, John. I'm good.
Thanks for joining us. I just wanted to clear that up because I know we haven't heard the end of this. In fact, it's the narrative that I think his wife, Patty Blagojevich, parlayed so well on Fox News to the president. If we have a common enemy, then even though we don't know each other, we're allies of sorts. And I think that played a role in this. But what is the truth about the role that Comey, Fitzgerald, and Mueller played in Blago's prosecution?
Okay, so they all played three separate roles, if they had any role at all. And so we'll start with Comey, who had no role. He was the deputy U.S. Attorney General when the probe started into the administration. But you remember...
Into the Trump administration.
People sort of,
Blagojevich administration.
Into the Blago administration. Yeah. Way back when, in 2003. And as you remember, it started as a very small-time corruption case involving the hospital board. And dominoes started falling after that. It did not begin as a let's get the governor investigation. It grew into that. But by the time it grew into that, Comey was gone. He left in 2005 and went to the private sector. And Blagojevich was indicted in December of 2008. So he was not involved in any way in the wiretapping of the governor or in the governor's indictment and arrest.
So if I may, Stacey, it's fair to say that Comey pushed the first domino, but he had no idea that it was going to end up the way it did.
Well, Chicago, the Northern District federal prosecutors pushed the first domino, and he was in charge of those federal prosecutors from afar in Washington, D.C. So to the extent that he supervised the people...
Oh, wow.
That pushed the first domino.
Well, that is even more removed still. I mean, it's not like at that juncture, this guy in D.C. instructing his staff in Illinois had a let's get Blagojevich agenda. And when it did get to that point, I understand you're telling me, Stacey, he was long gone.
He was long gone. And the Northern District of Illinois U.S. Attorney's Office, they already had a reputation as being corruption busters. George Ryan was... on trial and facing jail time, a prison time at that point. So it wasn't like all of a sudden they became, corruption fighters in Chicago. The federal prosecutors under Patrick Fitzgerald already had a history of that and a track record of that.
That's helpful. Okay, what else should I know about these other players?
Okay, so we go on to Mueller. Mueller was the FBI director under President George Bush when Blago was arrested. And in fact, he sort of has the famous line when he came after the tapes were made, he heard them and he heard the talk on them about the, effing golden. And I gave your grandmother a free ride, those famous quotes. And he sort of shook his head and said, only in Chicago. But he did not seek the wiretaps against the governor. That was done by Bush appointee Attorney General Michael McCaskey, and that went to a court through prosecutors, not through Mueller, through prosecutors, and a court approved the wiretap. So it was not under Mueller's hand that Blagojevich was secretly recorded.
And then what about Fitzgerald or Fitzpatrick, as he is known?
Patrick, as he's known to the president, but Patrick Fitzgerald, as he's known to pretty much everyone else in the world. Patrick Fitzgerald is a longtime friend of Jim Comey's. That is undeniable. They were prosecutors together in the Southern District of New York, and they have remained friends. When Comey was fired by the president, Comey hired Patrick Fitzgerald, his friend, as his attorney. So Patrick Fitzgerald represents Comey, but he was not a member of Mueller's probe. He did not start the Mueller probe. He never joined the Mueller probe. He solely represented Comey's interest.
But what does that have to do with Rod Blagojevich? Fitzgerald and Comey are pals. Fitzgerald represents Comey. That's relative to Trump letting him go. How does that have anything to do with Rod Blagojevich?
It does not in the sense that, I mean, Fitzgerald put Rod Blagojevich in jail, no doubt about it. But he did not play a role in investigating the Russian interference in the election.
Wow. Okay. Well, that clears
it up. All these people know each other and they run in the same circles, but to say they conspired to put both Blagojevich and Trump in hot water is a stretch, and it's inaccurate.
Well, so Robert Blagojevich was on with Ro Khan yesterday afternoon, and he said, I had no idea what the swamp was until we found ourselves in the crosshairs of these people. And he pointed out that what Fitzgerald was the godfather of Comey's kid or vice versa, and he used the word incestuous, and he made it sound like it's a bunch of egotistical, power-hungry prosecutors who just like taking governors down, and Rod got in the way of that.
Well, it is a fact that they are close friends, and it is a fact that when you reach that level of power and influence in the legal community, you know each other and you run in the same circles. Just as Blagojevich knew Trump because they were both reality TV magnates, right?
Wow.
So people do interlap, and there is a lot of incestuous sort of connections in this story. But the idea that these three men conspired to bring down both Blagojevich and Trump just doesn't hold water.
Well, and if they did conspire to bring down Blagojevich, but in a court of law they won, then by my book, the guy was found guilty. So I was talking earlier, Stacey, about what's your motivation to do something. And I shouldn't even go down this path because I think their motivation was pure. It might have been tainted by the fact that Blagojevich became very unlikable. But if they have the goods, then I don't even know that that matters. If you're guilty, you're guilty. Even if you don't like the guy that's turning the key.
Right. I mean, he was convicted twice, you know, but who's counting? He was convicted the first time of lying to the FBI and then hung on all the other counts. And then on the second trial, he was convicted of all the counts of trying to sell the Senate seat, of shaking down the children's hospital. That one seems to get lost in a lot of the...
I think people remember the shaking down the hospital. I mean, to be honest with you, shaking down a children's hospital, boy, that's all you need to know for a lot of people. I'm out of time. Follow Stacey St. Clair on Twitter. You can read the chicagotribune.com/. Do you have your own byline, like St. Clair? Is that how I can follow you on the Tribune side?
I'm at Stacey St. Clair. My byline, Stacey St. Clair. You can find me through Google or on Twitter.
It's good to read you, and it's good to talk to you. Get your popcorn ready, and we'll watch it at 11.
There we go.
Thanks, Stacey. Bye now. That's Stacey St. Clair over at the Tribune. Good morning, John Williams. Lots of texts about Blago getting out of jail and his press conference at 11 o'clock this morning. John, if Obama pardoned him, would you still be angry? I think that's a real interesting question for a lot of people. Your displeasure with the president may transfer to this process, but if it was a president you liked, then maybe you wouldn't be so critical of it. And the reverse is true, too. If you're a Trump supporter, regardless of how you feel about Blago, you may say, attaboy, Mr. President, because I'm on your team. So it's, I think, a very difficult thing to sort of disassociate yourself with how you feel about the president and why he did it, rather than, hey, should Blago get out? Because I used to say, yeah, I think Blago should get out. But now it feels a little more nuanced.
Yeah, and ask yourself the question, had Obama done this, how would Trump react?
Oh, very good question. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, all of the players are sort of lining up here. You know what's getting lost, besides all the other news of the world in Chicago today, is the ongoing coronavirus story. And Dan Ponce's mother-in-law, as you know, is on that Diamond Princess ship, which was quarantined. He's going to jump on with us in about 10 minutes here and just kind of give us an update on where that story is. It's fascinating, and it is bizarre. But back to the Blago thing for just a second. So All of the Blago hits are now coming forward. I got this thing and it's gold and all of those tapes. In fact, you remember when J.B. Pritzker was running for office, the opposition ran as a commercial. At one point, a 15 or 30 minute special on TV, the recordings of J.B. and Blagojevich, where J.B. was trying to get in the administration and Blago was saying, well, wait a minute, what do you want and what do I got? And there was a little bit of horse trading going on. And clearly J.B. had aspirations to do something in state government. And he was thinking maybe treasurer or who knows what. Unfortunately, when those tapes became available and the opposition put sinister music underneath them, JB was not the only one that was snared in the net.
This is the unedited Rod Blagojevich FBI wiretap.
Rod, it's John Williams from GN Radio again. How are you? How's the hair?
What follows is the full, unedited, original FBI wiretap recordings obtained by the Chicago Tribune.
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
Viewer discretion is advised.
Are you a lawyer?
No. But I got an A on my constitution test in eighth grade.
Huh?
But wait a minute, I want to be clear about this. It took me two tries, so...
Huh?
So listen, I'm calling about a dance contest that I'm going to be in. You know, dancing?
Go ahead.
Like Dancing with the Stars?
Go ahead.
It's a cancer fundraiser with Arthur Murray, and I was...
Hang on one second, hang on. Hey, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm looking for donations.
Hang on
one second. Listen, I'm going to be dancing.
Oh, interesting. Let's think about that. You interested in that?
Well, sure. I like to dance.
Madigan is pushing labor to try to push Lisa.
No, Lisa Madigan isn't in this thing.
Huh?
So can I count on your pledge? $50, $100, right?
I mean, I'm not promising. I'm just saying these are all scenarios.
Went on like that for a while. My family was devastated when those tapes were made available.
That was bleeping golden.
Thank you. It was the same dance competition that Mary Vandeveld was involved in, but her name did not surface. She's clean as a whistle, that Vandeveld.
Actually, I was in a DuPage County one. I didn't get advanced into Chicago like you did, John.
Dan Ponce's on a phone from WGN-TV. He got off at, 6, right, Dan?
That's correct. Nice and early.
What's wrong with that picture, man?
It's an early morning, but, you know, and I always tell people, I wish I could say I get used to it. You don't get used to it, but, you know, it's worth it. It's a great TV station, and love the people I work with.
And just part of an ongoing Dynamite News blog, so props to you all on that. Your mother-in-law, famously now, was on that Diamond Princess cruise ship, quarantined there with her husband, your father-in-law, I guess, right? And then they got off the ship, though. And do I understand correctly, they're in Texas now?
That's correct, yeah. They were among the 350 or so Americans that were flown on two charter flights from Tokyo. One plane went to California, to Travis Air Force Base. That's a little northeast of San Francisco. And then my in-laws are at Lackland Air Force Base, and that's near San Antonio. And they've been there now for almost about 2 days.
How long are they going to be there, and are they quarantined there?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, they're quarantined for 14 days total, so they have 12 more days to go. You know, I don't know what to expect because you hear, like, quarantine on an Air Force base. You don't exactly think of very luxurious accommodations. But they say that their rooms are actually fairly nice. They're modest, but they're very comfortable. They were worried that they were going to be separated, but they're still together.
Yeah.
They have kind of a suite situation. So there's two bedrooms, and then there's sort of an adjoining common room. It's been a tough transition. I really haven't heard from them all that much. I did speak to them last night briefly, but they hadn't slept for 17 hours, and there was obviously a huge time difference. So it's taken them a little bit of adjusting there to kind of get settled into their new quarters.
They were quarantined on the ship, but is the idea that maybe they would have yet contracted the virus on the ship, so they've got to start the clock all over again?
That's exactly correct, yeah. They don't know, because, I mean, every day, I mean, you saw the reports, I mean, every day there was another, yeah, you know, couple dozen people that were getting infected, and they were all just worried. They were sitting on a giant Petri dish on this cruise ship, and so thankfully the American government said enough is enough, and the State Department got involved, and the CDC, and they were able to get those two 747s out there and in the air and get all those Americans off. A lot of Americans weren't so lucky, though. They had symptoms, and some have to stay in Japan for treatment until they're given the all clear. So it's just a mess. It's been really stressful. They're trying to keep their spirits up, but when I spoke to them last night, it was kind of getting to them about just how long this quarantine will have lasted.
Your family must be shaking your heads, right? Of all of the ships and all of the seas and all of the world, we had to walk into this one, that sort of thing, you know?
It's really just a really bad stroke of luck. And as I said, they're among those who have not shown any symptoms yet. But, you know, you read up on this coronavirus, you don't really know who's the authority here. Because some people say
right.
You know, it's 14 days. Some people say it's longer. You know, symptoms don't show for a while. So it's really kind of a mess.
Well, at least they're able to get a clean set of sheets and laundry. Last we spoke, you said on the ship they had no such luck.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, on the ship they weren't getting into laundry service. So now I just feel much better than being in America, you know, under the care of healthcare professionals here. I mean, remember on the ship, it's just a hospitality crew. I mean, they're not trained to deal with this kind of crisis. And, you know, on the Air Force Base, they know how to do a quarantine. Still, though, they say that there's some things that are not working out for them. They need to – delivery service isn't working well with the food, and they have these phones that they were given to contact people if they need assistance of different kinds. They say those aren't working yet, so they've been kind of frustrated. But hopefully they'll work out the kinks here in the next day or so, and they could just ride out the next 10 days.
WGN-TV's Dan Ponce is on a phone line. One last thing, Dan, and this may feel trivial at this juncture, but I wonder if they at some point get angry enough that an attorney calls them and they say they paid for the trip, the company refunded that, and then you told us last time they're going to give them free vouchers for another trip still, so they'll finally get that vacation. But have they thought about civil action against the cruise line or somebody?
Yeah, that's a good question. The funny thing is my father-in-law is an attorney himself. He does he's done all kinds of different law in Southern Indiana with criminal defense and a lot of family law practice. But I haven't asked them about that. I think I would assume that there is going to be some civil action, but the question is, who is the responsible party? I don't think you can go after the cruise ship company because they were at the mercy of the government of Japan. And they, you know, refunded the money and gave them a credit for another cruise. So I think they kind of made it right on their end. But, I mean, I don't know who you sue. Do you sue a foreign government? So that is something that we've asked or, you know, that we've, you know, questioned. But obviously the priority now is just to get them home healthy. And then I think I would imagine that the passengers will get together and there will be some sort of civil action.
Get some sleep. Nice to talk to you. We'll watch you on TV, and we really appreciate these conversations lately. Our best to your family, Dan.
Yes, I appreciate you checking in. We'll be in touch.
Dan Ponce over at WGN-TV. WGN Radio's Andy Mazur standing next to me. We're in the Skyline Studios downtown Chicago. He's leaving this bright, sunny day for Arizona later today?
Yes, later on today.
The White Sox first exhibition game
Saturday
is going to be Saturday
the
on
Angels.
This little radio station.
Correct. 2:05 first pitch.
I know it's a long way down the road, but it's the road. I mean, son of a gun, we've got baseball on this radio station Saturday.
Yeah, it just kind of smacks you in the face right around the corner. You know, you look at it and you're thinking, oh, we got a lot of offseason left, and nope. Pitchers and catchers are there. Position players are there on both sides of town, and actually both teams are going to play their first games on Saturday.
You, Ed, DJ, all down there?
Yeah.
So we'll hear you doing some of the action. Is it going to be the full squad, the split squad?
I think this is a full squad.
Yeah. So we'll hear who will swing the bat in this game.
Well, I would imagine that in this first game, especially for the fans that are showing up, you'll probably see a lot of the regulars. I would think Eloy would be in there. I think probably Luis Robert would be in there. New acquisitions.
Tim Anderson will swing.
Tim Anderson. I don't think Yasmani Grandal is ready to play yet. He's got a little bit of a leg issue there. And
who's this giant center fielder we got that came on
board? That'd be Luis Robert.
Is he going to play?
I'm pretty sure he'd play.
Yeah, yeah.
Nomar Mazara, a guy that they got from the Rangers in right field. Probably Abreu at first.
Catching is?
It'll probably be McCann catching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he's still on the team.
Yeah, me too.
So this will just be fun. You know, and of course, it does not matter if they win. Be nice if they did. Be
true.
Nice if they hit some home runs.
Yeah.
I remember Chris Bryant's first at bat in the exhibition season last year. Mm-hmm. Everybody was anxious to see how he'd do. And do you remember what he did?
Goner.
Yeah, yeah. Hit a home run.
Yep.
And as you know, that was that presaged what happened to the Cubs. They won the World Series again last year.
Yeah, I would caution fans, though. You know, don't look at the stats from Arizona, because Arizona is one of those hitters states, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
The infields are really hard. The official scoring is not very legit, because it's usually the home team's public relations staff that's doing the scoring.
Base hit!
So don't look at the averages and that kind of thing, because and they'll be facing a lot of younger minor league pitchers.
Yeah.
But you just want to see them get out of this healthy.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Let's see a little bit of what we got.
Yeah.
And you'll hear it on the radio Saturday at 2, and Andy will be down there. Good to see you, bud.
You too.
Morning to you. This is John Williams. Phil Vitale, restaurant critic, Tribune, talks about the Purple Pig and Costali. He's got a couple of reviews. Maybe you've got a question, a comment, an observation about the restaurant scene in Chicago. Phil Vitale will talk about that in a half an hour. Steve, I don't know if you've seen this headline about the former governor, Rod Blagojevich, but it's from The Onion. Rod Blagojevich trying to sell presidential commutation to cellmate for $2.8 million. He's got this thing, and it's golden. It's a commutation.
How golden is it, John?
It's $2.8 million golden. That's the kind of golden that I can say on the radio, Steve. Hey, WGN, says this texter, why don't you guys ask yourself, who went to prison for trying to buy the senator's seat? No one. How do you justify prison for only one half of a crime? I'm not even going to go there. John, we're to blame for this. We don't pay attention to our politics, and people like Blago wind up in office. Once in a while, they get caught by the feds, thank goodness, or Blago would still be in office somewhere. My understanding is, returned to Illinois now, he cannot run for state office, but he could run for federal office. He could be a representative in the House. He could be the next president of the United States. But he could not be a member of the state legislature. He could not be the next governor, as I understand it. Yesterday, we were talking about the fact that the over-under for how many times Houston Astros baseball players will be beaned by the opposition this year is about 83. They're taking bets in Las Vegas. And because the Astros cheated to win the World Series, to get into the World Series and win the World Series, they cheated all season long. Other teams may throw baseballs at their hitters when they come up to bat this season. Well, that'll be fun to watch and bet on. I wondered out loud if that sort of strategic wildness is one of the things that helped Kerry Wood. Kerry was really good, but he was also wild, and he hit guys sometimes. I don't think Kerry was always doing it on purpose. I think sometimes he was just wild, but I think it played to his advantage. It led to a conversation about the 20-strikeout game that he famously pitched. By the way, a couple of you texted in when we were having that conversation, and one of the funny ones I thought was this one. It said, everyone should bring a garbage can lid to the ballpark when the Astros play and just bang them, which was the signal that the Astros bench sent to their hitters when they wanted to indicate what the pitch was. That's how they were cheating. But it did lead to this text message from one of our listeners who said, John, I've got a great Kerry Wood story. My young son was a pitcher at the time, little league or high school. After the great game of Kerry's, I took my son down to Wrigley on the L to see if we could get in to see him for his next outing. Remember, there was only about, 15 or 18,000 seats sold for the 20-strikeout game, but the next time, it's a sellout. The guy at the window says, sorry, we're all sold out. You can imagine our disappointment. I turned to my son and I said, sorry, honey. You'll have to watch him pitch another time. And the ticket agent said, hold on a minute, lady. And he reached under the counter and he pulled out two great seats and he gave them to us. I don't even remember a cash exchange. We were so excited. This is my son, John, that played against your son. Ended up playing for the state championship game and losing to the controversial call that allowed the other team to win it all. We cried. Go Shamrocks. Good Kerry Wood story. Thank you for the long text message. One other baseball note. I got a copy of the letter that RCN customers have received indicating that their TV rates are going to go up because of the Cubs baseball contract. A couple of lines in here stand out. We'll get to those in a couple of minutes. Hey, Nancy, it's John. You're on WGN. What can I do for you, Nancy? You're on the air.
Hey, I would just like to know how long you think it'll be before Blagojevich is working in the White House. There's an agenda here. And you know, he's really good sales.
Well, he did hire Omarosa Maginot. Remember, she was on that show, too, and that didn't go so well.
And you know he's going to think he's the king.
I'm hanging up on you, Nancy. What a terrible thought.
Yes, exactly.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Go away.
Bye.
Never call here again. That's not going to happen. I'll eat your hat if that happens.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he's at campaign rallies, absolutely.
Seriously?
Well, I think this is
Seriously?
I think a lot of this is about trying to paint the Justice Department as corrupt and out of line. Right. And that's, you know, I don't think it's any mistake that it happened during the week that Roger Stone is going to be sentenced.
Yeah, I get that.
So, yeah, I could see that.
I think Blago is such, I don't think the president fully understands how we in Illinois feel about Rod Blagojevich. Maybe that doesn't matter. On a national stage, he's just seen as a symbol of that. But I think he's a very imperfect example. I think he's a very imperfect example of what's wrong with the justice system, Rod Blagojevich. You know, Donald Trump may have his own case, but I don't think Blago is the victim of overreaching prosecutors.
Well, I think you could argue that a lot of the cases that the president's bringing up aren't very good examples of it. No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
Just think of him as a warm-up act in Alabama or Mississippi.
Yeah. Well, his brother was
Florida.
On, you know, I keep quoting his brother's conversation with Roe yesterday, but he said that the political community needs to embrace my brother. We need to bring Rod back into the fold. I don't know what the guy's going to do for a living. He can't practice law, but and a TV station would hire him, right? As a commentator, as a talk show host, I don't know. Once upon a time, this radio station would have hired him. I don't know what the guy's going to do for a living. Be interesting to see. The warm-up act at a rally about those Houston Astros. Hey, John, the Astros should be banned from using signs for a year. Make the Astro pitchers shout out the pitch they're going to throw.
Fastball! We as fans won't be able to bring in garbage lids, but the other teams could.
Listen to this. John, every team should have a garbage can lid giveaway. It should be garbage can lid night at the cell. Oh, that is so awesome! Except, you know, it'd be dangerous. It'd be a terrible idea. But it's a great idea.
Yeah, but you could convert it to lids as in hats. You know, make it like a garbage can hat or something.
Oh, yes! Steve Bertrand for promotions director. Very nice. Put the team logo on the garbage can lid, John, and they can whack it the whole game. Hey, John. Hey, Steve. Did you guys vote for Rod Blagojevich twice? Steve, I don't suppose you're going to answer that, and I don't know if I can because I just don't remember. But I'll tell you what, I was capable of it because when he went to jail and all of this hit the fan, I was like, wait, really? And my friends in the media, like Steve Bertrand, got mad at me. They're like, weren't you paying attention?
Yeah, it was shocking to me that you were surprised.
That I was so shocked.
The morning he was arrested, I was coming in the Tribune Tower down at the bottom of the underground, and the security guard said, hey, you know where Rod Blagojevich is? And I said, in jail? I had no idea. And he said, yeah, in jail.
Yep, they just put him in. In fact, he was at our station the day before. Back to the coronavirus for a second. So this is interesting to me. One of our engineers came into our office this morning, and packages get delivered to the station all the time. One of them was from China. It was some fancy radio equipment, and he was leery about opening the package up. He Lysoled it down, wiped it away. Producer Elif said that she's reading online people not opening packages or throwing away the packaging on anything from China.
I've stopped reading my fortune from the fortune cookies.
I'll tell you what, you're not getting your fortune cookies. People aren't going to Chinese restaurants. I got to listen to this text message from a listener. John, I love the show. Yesterday,
talked about a book about Wuhan virus.
Okay, right. So, John, yesterday you were talking about the book written a while ago that mentioned the Wuhan virus that was released unintentionally. Can you tell me the name of the book and the author? It was The Eyes of Darkness by Dean Kuntz, and it was a political international bio thriller where, you know, the Chinese come up with this horrible virus in Wuhan, and it accidentally gets released, which is the current thinking by some conspiracy theorists. But this is the one I was looking for, Elif. Usually, John, went to eat at our favorite Chinese buffet on Saturday for lunch. The place is usually full at lunchtime, but it was sparse. There were three other couples, and they were all Asian. It felt really weird. My friend commented the same at another location. The staff said they're experiencing very low volume at the place. I would not think twice about that. And I've thought that maybe as a goodwill gesture, we ought to do a Chinese food giveaway or certificates to a Chinese restaurant in Chinatown. But I know that some of you would not take it if I gave it to you.
I ate Chinese food on Saturday in Madison, Wisconsin. It was very delicious.
At a Chinese restaurant?
We went and picked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How you feeling?
Fine.
You look great.
I also got a ballroom dress delivered to me that was made in China.
I'm telling you, Mary.
And I opened it up and touched it.
Am I making this up, Elif? Some people are afraid to open packages from China.
You are not making that up, no.
I believe it, but I think it's ridiculous.
I didn't not open a package and throw it away, if that's what you're insinuating.
I am insinuating that.
Well, here's the thing. My uncle works in shipping. I don't know exactly what he does, but he works in shipping. And I asked my family, should I open this box when it arrives? And he said, no, you should just throw it in the garbage.
The box with what you ordered in it.
The way it came, get rid of it.
Don't even open it up.
Yeah, like
I'm just amazed at that. But that package has, in fact, yet
it
not
didn't
arrived.
Even arrive.
What
I don't
if it
know
arrives?
What
would you do?
I'd throw it away.
Oh, Elif.
How much?
It was $10 for a cushion case.
What price your health, Steve?
Yeah.
$17,000
for
a box sent from China. You're worried about catching the flu from it?
She's not alone.
No, I'm worried about catching the coronavirus from it.
Steve, the ball's in your court now.
There's no, I just kicked it.
No return,
I just got a technical foul.
But isn't there a certain life for a germ? Certain length of the, you know, how long they can survive on anything?
Elif, I think, rightly worries that a more porous surface like a cardboard box or a shipping container packing materials might house these vermin longer. And then when you open it up, they might get on you and you might get sick.
Well, I also Googled it, because I thought I was crazy, and maybe this was a silly idea for me to throw it away, but I read that someone else also threw away a nice coat that he bought that came from China.
So that's your Google evidence that someone else was crazier?
That's my Google evidence that someone
Steve,
was crazy.
Steve, I would appreciate it if you would embrace Elif's anxiety and try and help her.
Yeah, come on.
Not criticize.
I am trying to help her.
It hurts.
This just in, Singapore's Ministry of Health, Singapore's, has reported three new cases of the virus. And I'm reading from CNN. China has expelled three journalists from the Wall Street Journal for reporting on the slow response by Chinese officials and speculating on the economic impact for the country and the political impact for the country. And when somebody in China, who's evidently bilingual, read that, they expelled those Wall Street Journal reporters for writing that. Welcome to China. China, I'll tell you what, and there's more of them than there are anybody. There's what's the population of China, producer? Producer Elif, would you please get us the population of China, please? I believe it's like 1.2 billion. I believe there's four times as many of them as there are of us. Four times. The point being that a high percentage of the Earth's population, really, in this modern era, lives under that sort of control.
Did you say the population of China?
Yeah.
1.386 billion.
1.38, so 1.4 billion. So that's going on five times our population. How about them apples? I'm just wondering, 312-981-7200, call or text and tell me if you can relate to any of this. Are you not opening up your packages from China or Lysoling them down? And have you heard anything like that? Because while I'm a nicer person than Steve Bertrand, I, like Steve, think that that's crazy talk. By the way, if we don't open stuff from China, we're not going to get anything. There go your shoes.
Yeah, and I need my dress.
Yeah,
I even tried it on. Put it on. I'm fine.
I noticed a rash on the back of your neck. Oh, no, wait. That's a different show. That's the Stephen King one. Okay, 312-981-7200. If you are experiencing anything like this, if you have noticed any sort of reaction as a result, I'll take your call. We'll start with Debbie. Hey, Debbie, you're on WGN. Are you there? Hold on. Let's try it again. Hey, Debbie, this is John. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, John. I'm sorry, my tooth's a little off today. I opened some packaging yesterday from Wish.com, which I'm a daily shopper. Everything does come from China, several provinces in China. And yesterday, I finally opened my five or six packages, you know, and I've been worried about the virus being on those packages. And I finally get one that says that it's sprayed and sterilized. I have, my voice is gone today, and it was gone yesterday.
I have to tell you that you're making a very bad case for being able to open packages from China. You sound terrible, Debbie.
I was fine 2 days ago. I don't know if I was allergic to something that was on the packaging or what. It's like a powder. But my friends are concerned that maybe I might get sick, that I might have gotten sick. So now they're not talking to me. And my voice is screwed up, and I'm a singer.
How do you feel?
I feel fine. It's a runny nose, like allergies.
Isn't the incubation period longer than 2 days?
I've been home by myself, yeah, for those 2 days. But I could say I keep my packages in the back case I'm going to return something.
Okay, hold on. I'm running out of time, Debbie, but I want you to be well. You feel okay. You don't think you have the virus, right?
No, they will not take any packages back for any kind of return.
Because of this?
Because of the virus. So
Debbie, listen, I'm hanging up on you now. I got to go, but I just want you to answer this question. Do you feel okay, though? You don't think you have the virus, do you?
I've just been extremely tired. And I don't know. You know.
Okay, well, I'm no doctor. Debbie, good luck to you.
I hope Elif didn't catch it by talking to her.
You know, you are not helping the situation. Have I given you the little speech about the two kinds of things you can say to
helping,
people?
Helping, hurting.
The concern with the coronavirus is legitimate. It's valid. It's, according to one French health minister, on the verge of being a global pandemic. And the numbers are alarming, and they keep going up. But what do you do if you get a package from China? Sorry, I'm going to do that again. But what should one do if they get a package from China? And some of you are afraid to open them up. Although Mary dove into a dress that came from China, and she seems to be doing pretty well. A couple of calls about this. Let's just, are you okay, by the way, Elif? You look like you were about to say something, or you're alarmed.
Can I read my mom's text?
What's that?
She said,
she's listening right now.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. The virus itself, nobody knows whether it was alive on it. She says, she has a Turkish accent. It's really sweet, but it's very understandable what she said. The virus itself, nobody knows whether or not it's alive on the garments or not.
Right.
So until scientists are 100% sure about it being, it's the safest thing not to touch it. You did a great job, is what she said.
So she's affirming your decision to not want to open a package from China.
Or she loves me. So.
Well, I think mothers, boy, if anybody would be super cautious, it would be your moms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stan, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN. Hi, Stan.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
I heard somebody, I was listening to someone talk about this coronavirus the other day. And they were talking about it can live up to 28 days on a surface.
28 days? I thought it will. The incubation's... well, that's different, though. The incubation is in your body. How long can it live on a surface? 28 days?
That's what I heard. Now, I'm just repeating what they were saying, and I was like, wow. I was like, that's a pretty long time.
I'm going to have producer Elif double-check on that. That sounds long to me, Stan.
And John, how do you clear... You said China was 1.4 billion?
1.48, almost, 1.4 or 1.5 billion.
Don't you think that might have been, that numbers might be a little bit off? I don't know how you clear that many people off the street that quick.
It is. Thank you for the phone call, but it's pretty amazing. Have you seen some of the video, like these business centers that would be teeming with people, tourist areas that would be teeming with people, are ghost towns, some of them. And I don't know if that's the curfew they've imposed or the lack of travel there. Nancy, what did you want to say? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. A friend of mine's daughter ordered her wedding dress about 6 months ago. She's getting married in 6 months, and the bridal salon just notified her that the dress will not be coming because the factory has shut down.
Wow.
In China.
Which is not to say she wouldn't open it, but it's simply not even going to arrive.
It's not even coming. I can't imagine how many brides this must affect.
Nancy, thank you for the call. From you, we go to Jason. You're on WGN. Jason, jump in there.
Hi, how are you today, John?
Good. Talk to me. What's up?
Great topic. So I'm an Uber driver, and, you know, one of the things that's a problem for us is that as rideshare people, we don't know where people are coming from. So when we go to the airport, I'm happy to drive people and drop them off there, but I'm not going to go sit in the line and pick people up because I don't know where they've been. And I know it's not a package, but it's a human being, and they get in your car and start coughing, you get a little scared. So
Chinese couple with face masks with a runny nose, and you think, shoot, my luck, huh?
Yeah, well, I don't even want to take the risk, so I drive off site and pick people up where I know they are coming from their houses. I won't even do it, and I know there's other drivers that are feeling the same way. There's a lot of blogs about it.
Wow. Jason, drive safe. Thanks for the call. I'm going from you to Ed. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Ed. You're on the air.
Thanks. You know, my quick Google search, after Steve mentioned it, indicated that coronavirus cannot be transported through the mail. However, I didn't delve deeper into it, and maybe Elsa's mom has a point, that it's not going to be transported through a cardboard box or maybe some plastic item you have. Maybe there are some lingering things on garments that we don't know about. So I think that's a fair point to look into, and probably should be a Google search on that. Could it be transported through garments through the mail?
Thanks for the phone call. It almost doesn't matter. I'll say it that way to say this. Regardless of the truth of the virus traveling in garments in the mail, it's going to hurt sales either way. Because even if it's not true, people think it's true. This texter says, boy, this is going to impact Amazon sales big time. Others said, John, I don't think the virus survives, quote unquote, on objects. Viruses maybe aren't even alive anyway, right? John, I think you guys are crazy to throw away packages. If you want to be paranoid, then spray it with Lysol, which is what one of my colleagues here did.
So many more of us have the flu, including the guys delivering the packages.
Well, they don't.
No one thinks twice about, I'm going to catch the flu by opening up a package I got in the mail.
Well, this isn't the flu. This is the novel coronavirus.
Did you read the 608 text from a mail carrier?
No, what's he said?
He said he's a mail carrier in Wisconsin. He's been delivering these China packages for months. We were told by the Postal Service by the time the package gets here, the germ would not have survived.
That's kind
and
of
I deliver about 10 packages a day from China.
Yep. Well, of course they're going to tell him that.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Steve, you are incorrigible today.
Oh, come on. The guy's not sick.
Phil Vitella is the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune, and he's patiently been listening to all of this. I appreciate that. Phil, good morning. How are you?
I'm terrified now. I'm afraid of afraid to shake hands now. I thought I was fine, but yes, this is scary. The people are really scaring me out there.
I don't know if there's a story to be done where you do a tour of the Chinese restaurants in Chinatown in Chicago, but I'll bet those places are half empty right now.
We had a story in the Tribune saying exactly that, and they're actually the community is starting to try to rally a little bit and try to persuade people to visit, saying it's. I mean, the risk of a flu. You're so much more risk for the flu, as Steve pointed out. That
blah blah blah, Steve.
Fretting over this other thing. Just I don't know.
Well, I think if you think about it in this term, don't think about it as coming from China or anywhere. Just think about it this way. There's a virus, there's a germ, there's a little dot, and it's in China. What are the chances that that got to a restaurant at a table you're going to be at in Chinatown in Chicago? It's low, is my point. low enough that you could eat there safely if you wanted to, and low enough that you could eat there safely if you just wanted to advocate for those people's businesses, a goodwill gesture, if you will.
Right. Yeah, very good point.
I said to Olive, well, let's invite some of those restaurateurs into the studio, and she looked at me a little eerily.
You know, it's when you hear about a mystery virus and that a lot of people are getting sick and you don't know anything about it, it's not hard to take the better safe than sorry and just avoid anything that reminds you of that particular virus or anything that reminds you of the area in which the virus was first discovered.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not rational. Reminds you of it? I mean, you don't want...
Exactly. It's fear is generally irrational. I mean, fear of, you know, bears is not, but fear of bears in Chicago is. So it depends on whether you're hiking in Montana or having, lunch downtown.
Well, after last season, I don't think anybody's afraid of the bears in Chicago. Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Boom.
All right, Olive said take a break and then do the reviews of the restaurants. Phil, are you talking about Purple Pig?
I will.
And how do I pronounce this other one?
Kostali.
Kostali.
Right.
Another restaurant that Phil's got a few things to say about. Hey, do you have a question or comment about the restaurant scene in Chicago? Phil and I would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Phil Vitale's the restaurant critic at the Chicago Tribune. What are you saying about the Purple Pig, Phil? That's not a brand new place. Why are you reviewing that?
Purple Pig is 10 years old. But last year, they packed up their restaurant on Michigan Avenue and moved about 75 feet south to another place on Michigan Avenue. But the new place is larger, about the same capacity as the old count on the old outside place, which this one doesn't have. But there's more elbow room. I don't know if you remember how many times you went to the old Purple Pig.
A couple times. It was tight.
Yeah, so you kind of elbow to elbow, right,
in
some of those communal tables?
Yep.
My favorite story at Purple Pig is I was there having dinner with my wife. She's sitting across from me because that's how those communal tables often work. You sit across from the person you're with. And it's a little crowded, and I'm just reaching my hand down gently to my lap because I got some stuff on my fingers, so I'm going to use my napkin. And I thought, well, you know, it might be a little crowded, but Jimmy has really, and I mean Jimmy Bannis, the owner, has really spent a lot of money on some quality napkins. Because the quality, it was just so soft. And then I realized that I was wiping my hands on the cashmere scarf of the woman sitting next to me. And I was, oops. And now you want to know what happened after I confessed. I did not. I said nothing, kept my hands in my lap, and hoped she didn't find out.
How should that go? I mean, obviously you did the wrong thing, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
But you would say, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I thought that your cashmere scarf was my very nice napkin.
Right.
And I've just smeared barbecue sauce over it and probably ruined it. Yeah. Phil?
Yeah, I didn't think I'd done quite that much, but I must admit I didn't inspect. And, but yes, I should have said, oops, I think I touched your scarf accidentally.
Yeah.
And frankly, I couldn't see whether it was, which is why I touched it in the first place. I couldn't see if I got anything on it. And then I said, let's take a look, make sure I didn't mess it up.
Oh, did you take a look?
I did not.
Yeah. So maybe.
I hunkered down like a chicken, didn't tell anybody, till now.
What kind of food do they serve at the Purple Pig, Phil Vitale?
There's a lot of pork involved, as you might imagine. Jimmy Bannis Jr. is the chef and partner, and he does charcuterie like you can't believe. I mean, he's got you go in there and you can start off with this big house platter, and you'll get bits of salami and some sausage and coppa and pancetta and guanciale and andouille and all this. All these various expressions of pig. I think one time, I think one of the things you could do is you could start off with pig ears, which they have fried, and then you have then there'd be some pig jowls, and I had I had a pig. I had a sausage made of pig tripe, and that was
tripe are the intestines, right?
Yeah, the stomach.
Yeah.
And then there's which was incredibly soft and mild, and
it's like a cashmere scarf.
I want you to find that woman, and I want you to apologize.
Like, I'm going to get 15 letters from different people claiming that it was their scarf.
I'm just going to say you are in for a dozen scarves now. But
right. There's going to be a class action suit. Anybody who ever went to Purple Pig with a scarf is coming after me.
Well, I liked that place before. Food wise, I liked it enough, but it was just too cramped for me. But a similar menu and different location, just down the street a few feet, and it's better as a result of that, right, Phil?
Yeah, and Jimmy continues to innovate. It's one of the things I really admire about this operation is that he won a Beard Award for outstanding, new chef, and he had plenty of laurels on which to rest had he chosen to do so, and instead he keeps innovating, he keeps trying new things, he keeps coming up with new ideas, and I really admire the work ethic there, and they've got a really good operation. I mean, the kitchen is humming. The servers on the floor are really smart, and the wine list is a revelation. You think of everything. You think of this place, and you think of all the charcuterie and all the interesting dishes, and the chicken thighs with tzatziki sauce and that kind of thing. And you can kind of forget he's got something like an 800 bottle wine list there. Really, a really, really deep selection. You're really into wines, this is a nice place to check out.
Purple Pig, it's on North Michigan Avenue, just over the river. It used to be on the west side. I presume it's still on the west side of Michigan Avenue?
It is.
Across from the Old Tribune Tower.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It used to be fun to live when I was in Tribune Tower, because then I could just walk across the street there. But now I have to walk a little farther.
By the way, Peggy has a question for you. You're on WGN. Hi, Peggy.
Oh, hi, John. Nice to talk to you.
Sure. What can we do for you?
You were on a couple of weeks ago with Phil, and you mentioned a couple of steakhouses on the west side, on the western suburbs. One in Melrose Park, Tom's Steakhouse, which we love and go to frequently, because we don't get downtown too much anymore. And you mentioned another one that's out west. Do you remember what it was?
I'm pretty sure it was the Golden Steer, wasn't it?
That sounds familiar.
The Golden Steer. That's right here in that's in Berwyn or
Forest Park. When you're up and down Roosevelt Road, there, it's really hard to tell when one town ends and the other one begins. Yes, there's 7635 West Roosevelt Road,
right.
And it's really cute.
Well, thank you very much. It was nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Peggy. I hope that helps. Yeah. Golden Steer. That sounds like a $9 steak place. It's nicer than that.
It does. It's nicer than that. But what it is not a $45 steak place.
Well, that's what we were looking for last week. By the way, Phil, some text messages and emails from our listeners. Elif said we got to take a break here in a minute. But John, most Chinese restaurants in Chicago employ people who came from or visit China. John, my son purposely ate in Chinatown last night. I guess my son and I purposely ate in Chinatown last night. If we're live in 2 weeks, we will go back. John, the wife and I have eaten in Chinatown 3 times in the last 3 weeks. We love the lack of crowds. I'm sure they don't. But that's what's going on in Chinatown in Chicago. Yeah, we need to do something with or for those people.
That restaurant community is really taking a hit right now.
Yeah. I got to take a hit right now, too. I got to let you go, Phil. The other restaurant, what did you give it? 1, 2, or 3, 4 stars?
I gave Purple Pig 3 stars. Costali, the place in the Gwen Hotel, which is just steps away from Purple Pig, I gave 2 stars. It's from the Naha people, and it's, as the name suggests, Costali. It's coastal food, mostly from everywhere from Portugal all the way to the Greek islands.
We'll review it maybe in a little more detail next week. We're kind of busy today, with Blago's press conference coming up.
I wonder what he's going to say. I'm looking for serious contrition here.
Yeah, you just stay tuned for that. Thank you, Phil.
All right, thank you.
The sun is shining on the Ravenswood Manor home of former Governor Blagojevich. Steve described the stoop upon which there's a black rail and a gaggle of media and onlookers.
We've seen him jogging up the stoop and down the stoop and speaking from the stoop.
In years past, it's that same stoop. I didn't know where I thought this press conference was going to be, but evidently he's going to walk out his front door. He'll have a perch over the crowd, and from there he can talk, and then it looks like people will be shouting questions at him, and
it's like
he'll
a
be
scene
able to
out
respond.
Of a, it looks like a scene out of a Vita.
For instance.
You know, but what's interesting is, and maybe this says something about Rod Blagojevich, but he clearly has no concerns about showing everyone his house and where it is. You know, like a lot, I don't think
no,
many politicians,
yeah.
You know, they'd come downtown or do somewhere neutral, but we're seeing a lot of shots of his home.
This is the sort of thing that would, under normal circumstances, this is not a normal person, be from an attorney's office in a beautiful suite or something like that.
Right.
But here it is in his very own home. Ryan Burrow is one of the reporters in that crowd. Ryan, what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Well, John, welcome to the center of the media tent right now. I'm literally 4 or 5 feet away from the bank of microphones. And by the way, it's not a black rail anymore. It is a green rail. It looks like it's freshly painted. So a little bit different of a scene, I suppose, than we saw 8 years ago. But just a swarm of media, national media, local media as well. A lot of people who are pretty familiar with this spot from 8 to 10 years ago and having to do these very same kind of press conferences. So. You know, we're waiting for the former governor to come out. We thought this thing would be pretty much on time based on the way the handlers were kind of looking at their watch and shouting out how much time till 11 o'clock. But looks like we're a little bit of a delay right now.
John, I'm sorry, Ryan, who are the people there who are not reporters? I hear Ronnie Woo Woo is there, but I'm just wondering.
is he really?
Yeah.
Who else is showing up there? What are the people? What
you
kind
know,
of people are we talking
there
about?
There have been some supporters who have come out holding signs. There's a big Rod Blagojevich head. Circulating, by the way, the head has a full dark-colored head of hair, so it's from a former picture, not a new picture. And then some supporters have come out. I guess you call them looky-loos with their cell phones, wanting to take video of this. Of course, mingling in with the media, who's trying to get their perfect shot, so it can be a bit challenging at times. But this is public area. I'm literally sitting Indian style on a public sidewalk right now, waiting for this. So everyone's just kind of trying to cram as close as they can into this space, and we'll see what happens. We don't believe he's actually going to be on the stoop. At least we hope not, because that's not where the microphones are. Hopefully he comes down to the bank of microphones here on the sidewalk and speaks to us there.
Mm. What question? Well, I'm glad I'm not doing your job today. I mean, I don't know what my question would be. After all these years, you finally get a chance to ask him a question. I guess it would be, are you sorry? Given the opportunity, Ryan, what would you ask the governor?
I want to know about this this Trump relationship a little bit. Has he spoken with the president? Does he plan to campaign for the president? Because he's now referring to himself as a Trumpocrat, if you've seen the video from WGN-TV. So, you know, that's one of the things. I have a feeling this press conference, knowing the ex-governor, will last for some time. There will be many questions. In fact, if you want to get any questions, then I'm sure you'll be able to. But just knowing his history of wanting to speak his mind. So we'll see how this all plays out. And, you know, in the media, we kind of play off each other a little bit, too. And you know, feed off of the questions that
yeah,
we already
right,
asked.
Right. I watched the last interview that he did with NBC5 before he went to jail. And it reminded me of the very first opportunity we had to see him coming out of jail. And in both instances, he was focused on the cameras. He loved to give an answer. He loved to talk about his feelings. And so there he was sitting down with NBC5 and some other reporters, and they asked him about his daughters and leaving them. And he did not seem to be, God, this is unfair of me maybe, because what do I know what's going on in that man's head? But he did not seem to be reacting the way I would or you would if you thought, boy, for the next decade, I'm not going to be in my daughter's lives. And he was talking about how this is going to be hard for him and they're all going to be brave and strong. Anyway, then last night he comes back out, and instead of running into that house with his head down and reuniting with his family, he's shaking hands in front of the house. I think he signed an autograph.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's going on here? Dude, get out of the yard.
It was a little unique as well that the family didn't come and meet him in Colorado. I don't exactly know what the circumstances were. It may have just occurred too fast, although obviously Chicago media was able to get out there and get a camera on him. So, you know, logistically speaking, they felt that this was the best way to go about it. That's another question, I suppose, that could come up today as to why things actually went the way that they went yesterday. But I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll see, too, kind of what the setup here is. Who's all speaking? Is it just going to be Rod? Is the whole family going to be there? We'll have to see.
I get the feeling it's not going to be about the questions. It's going to be about the answer. I mean, you know, I don't know that it matters what questions he's going to be asked. I think he's probably going to come out with a message, and that's going to be that. I mean, he's going to take questions, but...
And is what's
I don't think. I guess my point is, I don't think we're going to get to any great insights about his time in prison during this event. I could be wrong.
Will we hear any contrition, guys?
No. Ryan, I mean, we haven't heard contrition from day one, so.
No, I don't think. I'd be very surprised. Let's just put it that way. We'll try. We'll try to get him to, but I don't know if that'll work.
Well, don't try to get him to do anything. Just see what he says. But I sure like him to have the opportunity to, if he wanted to make life easier for his daughters, his wife, and himself, maybe this violates his own personal code, but he would say something like, "I did wrong, and I want to apologize to everybody."
But John, he should have said that 8 years ago, 10 years ago. I mean, we wouldn't be here right now, right?
I think the sentence would have changed. You bet. If that's what you're referring to, if he had showed a little more contrition when he had a chance, but he just didn't. He was resolute, and he's paid the price.
Well, I mean, it could well be that he doesn't believe he has anything to show contrition for either.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about back then and even now. If you just wanted to pave the way for your future, a little contrition, just a little humility, would go a long way. It's not a strong suit. Maybe it's not even his truth, but I think it would help. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll see. We're assuming he'll come out with the silver hair, too. Some jokes as to whether or not he would be donning black hair. Okay.
Wouldn't that be something if we're waiting for him to bring the old hair color back?
Well, he used to have a bag man carry his bag with his brush in it. I mean, his hair was remarkably important to him. He wouldn't be the only vain politician or radio talk show host, so I fully understand that. But I'm wondering what his hair will look like.
That would be something else.
I've got the over on Brown. I'm sorry, I picked Brown a long time ago, and I'm still holding to it. Producer Olive said, okay, he hasn't come out yet. Guys, just stay right there. We'll interrupt the commercial if necessary. Our Ryan Burrow is at the Blagojevich household, along with the rest of the media. It's 11:18. I'm John Williams. Steve Bertrand's in the WGN Radio newsroom. Our Ryan Burrow is at the Blagojevich household, along with a gathering of media and onlookers, even supporters. Are there signs of support, you know, free Blago or anything like that, Ryan?
Yeah, there's one that says, thank you, Mr. President. It was hanging on a window before, but it looks like it's been taken down. I think pointing to the fact that, as Mr. Blagojevich has said, he did nothing wrong. So, there are a handful of supporters here. We've heard some people in the neighborhood who've shown support, at least that he's back reunited with his family again.
Right.
So,
I keep hearing someone yell, make Chicago great again. Is that...
You're serious?
I'm listening in the background.
There's occasionally... we've also had a guy who stepped up to the microphones and, ripped on political corruption and, it did not have very favorable things to say. So it's been an interesting mix of people, as you expect to see, in these kind of events and gatherings.
I suppose some questions will be about the president, since obviously the president has commuted the sentence of the former governor. And why he did that, I think, is very interesting. The president and Rod Blagojevich are not close friends. Donald Trump mispronounces Blagojevich's last name and even did so yesterday. They just really don't know each other that well. One was on the other's TV show. But they have a common foe, and it's officials in the Justice Department. And so that may be one of the motivations for the president. But what also has played into this is how smartly Patty Blagojevich has played this story to the president via Fox News, via Fox TV. Here's just an example, guys, while we've got a minute. This is Patty Blagojevich on with Martha McCullum on Fox News on January 25th of 2019 for more than a year now. Patty's been talking to the president via the president's favorite channel.
My husband's serving 14 years, like you said, for conversations with his staff about fundraising, and the penalty for second-degree murder, a murder conviction, is just 6 years. The prosecutors even asked the judge to sentence my husband to 20 years. And why would they do that? Because they wanted to bury my husband and the truth about what they did to our family so deep it would never come out. That that Obama Justice Department locked him up and threw away the key, and Mueller and Comey and Fitzgerald destroyed my family by creating fake stories and fake crimes with unprecedented raids and sensational
news conferences. Well, you know, it's interesting that there's so much focus right now on sentencing.
And, you know, when President Obama had the opportunity to right this wrong that's been done to my family, he actually wimped out.
I guess the point is she's pushing all the right buttons there, right? Former President Obama bad, Justice Department bad, we're all victims of the same overreach. That narrative has been the unfailing narrative of the Blagojeviches and their supporters, and the president was receptive to that.
Yeah, you know, we've seen over the last several months the Blagojevich family, attorney, sending out messages to us in the media, pointing out to us similarities between the legal struggles that the president has been going through, as well as the former governor, kind of trying to draw that parallel. Also, very publicly stating support for the president. I mean, it's been a campaign that's been going on for well over a year, ever since the president first kind of floated that idea out there that he had been considering some kind of commutation. So, you know, obviously there was a reason for all of that. You know, is there a true belief behind that of support of the president politically? I don't know. Obviously, they only thought, you know, the commutation as a way for him to get out. I mean, he had lost every legal challenge, essentially, to you know, get out of jail early. And, you know, that was their only hope. So, you know, they had to suck up in one way or another.
Yeah, right. Well, and I'm sure that they had their convictions. They actually honestly believed that Rod A should not have gone to jail, and B didn't need to go to jail that long. Our news click itself, the web poll question we ask, it's completely unscientific. It's just a go online and click whatever answer you think is your opinion, but it's fun to look at. And when we asked you, did you think his sentence was too long, 47% of you said that it was good that the sentence was commuted. He had served long enough. 53% said he should still be in jail.
Well, this is one of those stories, though, that isn't partisan in many ways, or is upside down partisan. I mean, the White House statement yesterday, Ryan, you and I were talking about it. They said there were people on either side of the aisle supporting this decision, but they really only mentioned Democrats. There was one, Bob Barr, former Georgia Republican congressman, who was on that list. Otherwise, they were all Democrats or liberal-leaning people. The Republican Party of Illinois did not want this to happen.
Yeah.
Republicans are loath to speak critically of the president, but the Republican congressional delegation put out a joint statement saying this was a bad idea. Jim Durkin said it was a bad idea.
So did the governor.
Yeah.
And so did so did Governor Pritzker, and so did the mayor of Chicago, Lightfoot. So, you know, it's kind of interesting how this all turned out.
And Senator Durbin is among those who said, who's told you, John, that he thought the sentence was probably too long.
Yeah, well, we called Senator Durbin. The question I would have asked is, so if the sentence was too long, do you agree with this early release? I guess that sort of presumes that he would appreciate the reason that the president is doing it. Durbin hasn't been able to answer that question for us. But is there a politician, a standing politician of stature in Illinois, who supports the early release of Rod Blagojevich? Have you guys heard somebody speak out in the last 24 hours and say, I'm glad that he's getting out?
I haven't heard a name, but it's probably not unanimous that people are opposed to this idea.
Well, on both sides of the aisle is one point.
A speaker, Madigan, was asked about it.
Oh, we're about to go here, guys. So
said
I'll
no comment.
See on the other side of this one, okay?
All right, there goes Ryan. He's getting himself into position. Steve, we can bring the microphone up.
You going to do that? So we're waiting here for Governor former Governor Blagojevich to speak from his home. As Ryan said, it's not going to be from the stoop. The microphones are just off the stoop where he'll come down. And has quite a crowd waiting. The doors now are open. Some people coming out ahead of the former governor. And we are waiting now for Rod Blagojevich to come out. And I don't know if this will be a victory lap or just exactly what this will be, but he certainly has already spoken out against the Justice Department, praised, of course, President Trump for the commutation of his sentence yesterday. And reporters have been waiting there for some time now. They expected to see him about 25 minutes ago. And now Governor Blagojevich coming outside, silver-haired, if you had the over-under on that.
He I lost that one.
In a sweater only, waving to people. His family members are on the balcony with him.
Family members? You see his daughters too, Steve?
I see a couple of young ladies who I presume are his daughters, yes, along with Patty. And he's sort of soaking it in there and now walking down closer to the microphones where he will certainly make a statement and then take some questions, shaking hands all along the way.
He has some notes in his hand. Good. I believe those are notes in his hand, or is that a tissue he's dabbing his chin?
No. I think it's I think there probably are some notes that he wants to refer to. But he's shaking hands as he makes his way. I mean, the microphones are only about 10 feet from him, but he's certainly waving out to the crowd who've gathered there to support him or to watch him see all of this.
I saw a flash of smiles on the girls' faces.
You know what? He is dabbing his chin with that, so I'm not sure what. And then he just patted someone's back with it, so I'm not sure what that piece of paper is in his hand.
To his chin, like maybe he cut himself shaving or something, but here he comes.
Yeah, he is. He's holding holding a Kleenex to his chin.
I'll bet he was kind of fixing himself up for the cameras.
I bet the razors are sharper outside of prison.
I bet you can't get one inside. So yeah, he's definitely pressing the tissue to his chin. He was probably addressing that. But the girls are behind him. They all look lovely. Smiles on their faces. He's greeting some well-wishers, embracing some of the people around the bank of microphones. You see the WGN radio microphone there.
Yeah, it's just a matter of him turning around and addressing the cameras, but he doesn't seem to be in a big hurry to do that. He's got a lot of people there who are giving him hugs to say hello to him.
Patty is
now he moves toward the microphone.
Give him some room, guys. Give him some room.
And here's former Governor Rod Blagojevich.
Senator, speak, Senator.
Perfect.
Well, it's been a long, long journey.
That's right.
I'm bruised and I'm battered and I'm bloody. It's been a long time since I've shaved with a normal razor, and it takes a little practice. I'm sorry about that. I got to keep dabbing the blood.
So I have to apologize for his tardiness. He couldn't find where I put his socks this morning.
Lots changed in the nearly 8 years that I've been here. Let me just say a couple of things. First of all, the obvious I want to say, and that I know I speak for Patty and Amy and Annie, and obviously for me, we want to express our most profound and everlasting gratitude to President Trump. How do you properly thank someone who's given you back the freedom that was stolen from you? He didn't have to do this. He's a Republican president. I was a Democratic governor. And doing this does nothing to help his politics. President Trump is a man who is tough and outspoken, but he also has a kind heart. And this is an act of kindness, and I also believe it's the beginning of the process to actually turn an injustice into a justice. Sorry about this blood. All these years away, I never stop reminding myself of the words from a poem. It's called The Gate of the Year. Go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That shall be to you better than light and safer than a known way. It's been a long time since I've been home, nearly 8 years, nearly 3,000 days. I suppose a better way to measure how long it's been is through our daughters, Amy and Annie. When I left home so long ago, Amy, our older daughter, was a sophomore in high school. And it'll be 2 years this spring since she's graduated from college, and now just recently, Amy earned a master's degree. And we're very proud of you, sweetheart.
Yeah.
And Annie, our younger daughter, was 8 years old when I left. She was about this high.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's 16, and now she has her driver's license. And she's doing good in school. And she plays the piano. And we're very proud of her, too. Look at you, sweetheart. Look at you.
I don't think she likes the
attention. My baby's growing up so fast. Again, on behalf of my family, we want to express our profoundest gratitude to President Trump. It's been a long, unhappy journey. These have been hard years for our children. They've been hard years for Patty and for me. I spent my first 32 months in prison, nearly 3 years, behind what the inmates call the razor wire, the barbed wire fence. You can't go near that fence. If you do, there are prison guards there armed with machine guns who have the discretion to shoot you. I didn't go near that fence. The buildings behind that fence where the inmates live and sleep are squalid places. They're cold and dark like tombs. There were about 900 inmates there. Drug dealers, cartel members, gangbangers, bank robbers. There were men there who committed murder, con artists, a lot of sex offenders. About 2% of the population were in the so-called white-collar category. For most of my time there, my home was a 6 foot by 8 foot prison cell with 4 cement walls, a big heavy iron door that can shut you in, a small window with bars on it, and a bunk bed. I slept on the top bunk. Often late at night, I would look through that window and past those bars out into the night sky, and I'd think of home. I think of my children. I think of Patty. Sometimes I could almost feel her near me.
Just ignore.
I would say to myself, one day I'll make it back to you. And hold your hand, sweetheart.
Just woman of substance.
And I would remember what a gracious thing it's been to walk through life with you. Thank you for waiting.
She's so
you're bleeding out.
She's something else. What's that?
She's so good.
She sure is something, isn't she?
That's right.
Yep. Anyway, so again, on behalf of Patty and Amy and Annie and me, we want to again express our deepest gratitude to President Trump. Like I said, as a Republican president and a Democratic governor, he didn't have to do this. But President Trump is not a typical politician.
That's right.
He's tough. He's outspoken. He gets things done. He's a problem solver in a business where too many politicians don't want to solve problems. All they want to do is play politics and get nothing done for the people. I'm a Trumpocrat.
The Trumpocrat, that's right.
Are you gonna vote for him?
If I have the ability to vote, I'm gonna vote for him. Well, I don't know that they allow me to vote, but I'll get into that in a minute. But let me just say that our president is he's tough and outspoken, and he has the courage to challenge the old way.
That's right.
He's the one who's actually fighting to bring real change. That's why he gets so much pushback. But notwithstanding being tough, he's also a man with a kind heart.
That's right.
He sees wrong and he tries to right it, just like he did in the case of Alice Marie Johnson. Mm-hmm. You know who she is, the grandmother from Alabama who served 21 years in prison on a life sentence as a first-time nonviolent drug offender. A life sentence as a first-time nonviolent drug offender.
First step, let alone.
Alice Marie Johnson's case is probably one of the better illustrations that shows how the federal criminal justice system disproportionately discriminates against African Americans and people of color, and how the 1994 crime bill has led to the over-sentencing and to the creation of what the author Michelle Alexander has called the new Jim Crow in America.
That's right.
You know what I'm talking about.
That's right. Dump the Clintons. That's
1994 right. Crime bill passed by my fellow Democrats before I got to Congress. Fortunately, as soon as President Trump learned of the injustice against Alice Marie, he immediately put a stop to it, and he sent her home to her family. And fortunately, because this is a president who gets things done, through his leadership and with the help of organizations like Cut 50, President Trump was able to build the necessary bipartisan support to pass the historic First Step Act, a new law that begins the process of reforming a broken criminal justice system and putting an end to the racist injustice caused by that racist 1994 crime bill. Now, as for me, obviously, I've got 10,000 reasons to be thankful to President Trump. I'm obviously thankful to be home, to have my freedom back, to just be able to hold my wife's hand. But most of all, I'm thankful to you, Mr. President, for giving my daughters their father back. My daughters are growing up, and the day is not too far off when they will go out into the world on their own. Now I wish I could slow down time. But no matter where their life's journey may lead, they will always take with them the realization that the kindest gift they've ever received in their lives came from you. Thank you, Mr. President, for what you've done for me, but better, far, far better, thank you for what you've done for them. I'd like to thank a few people real quick. I'd like to thank my old friend, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, for his voice and for his help and for his support. Yeah. I want to thank my friend and former colleague in the Congress, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., for his friendship and his support. I want to thank Patty's dad, for Alderman Mel, Richard Mel, for his love and support to our daughters and to his daughter, Patty. I want to thank this mystery man, a young man who brought all this about. I just met him yesterday, and this is Mark Vargas. He's quite a guy, and he's the kind of guy who can get you out of prison if you find yourself stuck there. And I'm really grateful to his efforts and what he's done on my behalf. Huh? Oh, sorry.
I'll just hit you like this every time you have to do it.
Sorry, Marcus.
Brought last night,
hang on 1 second, my friend. The scriptures teach us and history shows that in the long run, right defeated will in the end overcome. The scriptures teach us and history shows that in the long run, right defeated will in the end overcome wrong triumphant. And as Dr. Martin Luther King used to say, truth crushed to earth will one day rise again, because no lie can live forever. I'm returning home today from a long exile, a freed political prisoner. I want to say again to the people of Illinois who twice elected me governor, I didn't let you down. I would have let you down if I gave into this. But resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. Not long ago, United States Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer warned about this. He warned about federal prosecutors bringing criminal charges against government officials for what he described as routine practices. Justice Breyer went on to point out, and I'm quoting him, to give that kind of power to a criminal prosecutor who is virtually uncontrollable is dangerous to our separation of powers, end quote. I've learned the hard way just how dangerous that is. From beginning to end, this was persecution masquerading as prosecution. I got into politics to help people. I didn't get into politics to make money. I didn't get into politics to enrich my family or my friends. I got into politics because I was fortunate to live in the greatest country that's ever existed. My immigrant father fought the Nazis. He spent 4 years in a prisoner of war camp. After that war, he spent 3 years in a refugee camp waiting for the day that one day, the Congress, that one day his youngest son would become a member of, would pass a law called the Displaced Persons Act to allow him and millions of others like him, immigrants from all around the world with long and hard to pronounce last names, to be able to come to America to pursue freedom and opportunity. My dad basically did about 7 years in prison. I got him beat. I've done almost 8. But my dad believed in America. He took the gift of freedom not for granted because he knew what it was like to live under oppression. He didn't go back to his country, Yugoslavia, because it was a communist country where freedom wasn't allowed. So he came here, and he got a job working in a factory. And for most of his life, all of his life in the United States, my dad was a working man, a factory worker. And my mother was a working mother who worked for the Chicago Transit Authority, passing out the transfers at the subway stations. They never had a chance to live the American dream and own a home of their own. But they worked hard and sacrificed so that their kids can have opportunities they didn't have. This is the American story. And my mother and father lived that. And so I'd like to think that as governor, what I did was to try to draw on my own life experience and try to take those experiences and turn them into something real to help people. That's why we provided health care to all the kids in Illinois through the All Kids program. Because I saw as a young child a cousin who passed away from leukemia at the age of 12 and didn't have insurance, and his mother and father lost what little they had. We provided free transportation to every one of our senior citizens and to the disabled. Because I remember my father as a senior citizen being proud of a senior citizen discount card he had where he could take the bus for half the price. And we were able to take that and apply that to everybody in the state of Illinois. I wouldn't allow that swamp in Springfield and my fellow Democrats down there who just wanted to raise taxes on the working people to raise their taxes. And so it was always a struggle, a constant battle to try to remember who I was supposed to fight for. And so I hope now, looking to the future, that I can draw from my life experience, particularly those over the last 8 years in prison and 11 years since this all came to us, and do something to try to fight to help people who've been wrongfully incarcerated or those, and this is probably the rule and not the exception, those who have been over-sentenced, nonviolent offenders who made a mistake, did wrong, but have been sentenced to years in prison that not only destroy their lives and steal from them their futures, but they hurt their children and their family. I saw what they do to families because I saw it happen to my own. And every time I'd go into the visiting room to visit with my family, I'd look around that room and I'd see mothers with their children. And you can tell it was a mother because you can see it in the sadness of her face. I would see fathers with their young children. And you can see the discomfort that the family feels. So I hope that as I move forward, I can take some of that experience that I've had and try to do what I can to try to improve what is a broken, and I believe in many cases, a corrupt criminal justice system.
You're listening to live coverage of Governor Blagojevich as he speaks outside his home after being released from prison yesterday here on 720 WGN.
We put more people in jail than China and Russia. Federal prosecutors like to boast about their 97% conviction rate. But doesn't that boast show just how rigged the system is? Unless you're the undefeated boxing champion Floyd Money Mayweather, who else ever wins 97% of the time at anything?
He's not even undefeated anymore.
Well, 10 and 94.
No, he hasn't lost.
Oh, no, Floyd.
No, Floyd Money Mayweather has not been defeated. Don't say that, Patty. You'll probably get a phone call from him. Everyday people who find themselves caught up in the system have no chance. And many of them recognize the futility in fighting for their rights, so they just give in. And under duress, because they're being threatened with long sentences, they agree to plead guilty to things they didn't do. Unfair. Unfair and cruel over-sentencing is the rule. It's not the exception. Equal protection under the law doesn't exist. Wildly unfair disparities in sentencing for the same or similar offenses are not uncommon and defy common sense. And in way too many cases, way too many nonviolent offenders are given way longer prison sentences than violent offenders and sex offenders who've actually caused great physical and emotional harm to their victims. It is a broken criminal justice system, and it has been for a long time. And it's a racist criminal justice system. But there's hope. And one of the great ironies of history is that so far up till now, in the history of our country, no one has done more or is currently working to do more to fix this broken and racist criminal justice system than President Trump and Jared Kushner.
That's right.
One last thing. I'm going to dab this blood again. Am I good?
Just keep doing it.
All right. I just feel him on me.
Yeah.
I'd like to say something about adversity. And I'd like to direct my remarks to all of my fellow underdogs out there who find themselves up against powerful forces and long odds. To anyone facing hard circumstances, who've suffered loss, are hurting, or who, like me, have hit rock bottom. You may be down. All your hope may seem to have disappeared. The road you have to travel is a long one, and home, that's where you want to be, is so far away you can't even see the flicker of a light at the end of the tunnel. But don't give up. Don't give up. Think of the people you love.
Governor choking up a little bit there.
I'll get it out. Hang on. Think of the people you love. That's where you'll find your purpose. My love for my family and my faith in God is what sustained me during this long and seemingly never-ending trial. It gave me purpose to stay strong and, along with Patty, to try to set the right example for our daughters, to show them that when adversity enters your life, even when your calamity comes on like a whirlwind, and just about everything has been taken away from you and your heart's broken, don't quit. Fight. Fight. Keep fighting and persevere in storms and through the dark passages. And when you find yourself alone, all alone, in the lonely wilderness, because it is there in that lonely wilderness where we are tried and tested, that we must rise to our circumstances. We must rise above our circumstances and dare to dream.
If you're wondering, he is not reading this from a script. Unless he's memorized it, this is all spoken spontaneously. It's an ad lib.
I read every word I wrote was my way of fighting back, my way of using the time in the wilderness to prepare for a better day. Waiting in the shadows, waiting for justice, waiting and hoping.
That's right.
So live in faith, hope, and love. Vivir con fe y esperanza y amor. And if you have to, take a stand. And don't be afraid. You're not alone. You never go alone.
That's right.
It is so often the case that in the sadness of life, we look for God. My faith in Him. Turn despair into hope and made me strong, trusting that one day, through the grace of God, He will turn darkness into light and lead me home. Thank you.
Governor Rod Blagojevich, speaking to reporters and supporters outside his home today, spoke for nearly 25 minutes, gives his wife Patty and daughters a hug and kiss on the cheek. It's not clear yet. It looks like he's moving away as if he will not take questions. He's moving back inside the House. John, you brought up a great point because the governor, whether you are a supporter or a detractor, showed pretty remarkable eloquence there, I would say, in the last 10 or 12 minutes.
Well, I've decided to vote for him again.
I don't know if you have a chance for that, but let's see here. He's taking some questions away from the microphones.
A little bit like the president at times when he knows it's time to go but can't resist the pull.
Governor, Amy.
Yeah, he's making his way up the steps, so I don't think he's going to take questions. But, you know, he hit on many of the themes you would expect, certainly praising President Trump, and who wouldn't, the man who freed him yesterday.
Yeah.
Also talking about the injustices of the judicial system, how it was racist in many ways, and how he thought he was going to fight that. He was broke up a couple of times when referring to his family, and then the last sort of soliloquy there about when you are alone to continue to fight, to stand up for what you believe in, you pointed out was not being read. It certainly sounded as if it was. It was heartfelt and was moving at times.
Yeah. To all my fellow underdogs out there, you may be down. You can't even see the flicker of light at the end of the road. And on he went. I mean, he certainly had plenty of time to think about this. And if he committed some of those passages to memory, I know he had the opportunity, but it sure did not look like that. And his eloquence we have lost for 8 years just came gushing forth. To what end? I don't know. He's not running for office, although at times it even sounded like a campaign speech.
So Ryan mentioned earlier there was a giant Blagojevich head there. And what that is that, you know, sometimes at college basketball games you see
a big head.
The big head that they're waving in behind the opposing free throw line.
Yeah.
He just signed his own big head.
Yeah, he's autographing it.
He's walking. He's not yet back in the house. So the time we've been talking, he's not moved 10 feet. He's back up on, I'll call it the Evita porch.
You're the only one calling it that,
I know,
but I get
your
point. You
sort of walk into it from either direction,
yeah.
And he was waving to, he continues to wave to people, puts his hand on his heart, thumbs up, and it's an odd scene there. You have him with the big Blagojevich head behind him waving with his family as he walks back inside the house.
Two other voices I just wanted to bring in here. Ji Suki will be coming up at the business lunch in about 15 minutes. And in fact, she was at the first trial every single day. And Ro Khan was visiting with just about every principal in this story yesterday on his afternoon show. Ji, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you. And Ro, are you over there?
I am. I am indeed.
All right. Let's start with you, Ro. What jumped out at you?
Well, you know, you talked about his eloquence. It's fascinating because that's always who he has been. He's always been capable of ad-libbing that. He commits passages and literature to his memory.
But
he can recite.
But, you know, but Ro, in the past, it didn't sound as genuine, I think.
I never thought it sounded genuine.
Well, how about today?
Today, I think what he's doing is obviously I believe he believes in himself. I don't think he ever believed he was doing anything wrong in his heart. I don't think he did. He just thought this is the way he was going to do it. That's the way he saw politics being prosecuted throughout his career, and he was just going to take advantage of it. I think when he was saying, hey, I'm not going to give this thing up for nothing, when he's talking about the Senate seat, he was saying that it could be either a political favor or it could be money. It could be who knows what it could be, but he just didn't want to give it up. And he just thought that that was log rolling. The other stuff, though, now the holding up of the money to the Children's Hospital, I think that's the one charge and conviction that is really holding some sway with people who are wondering, like, why would he do that? It was $8 million of money to then Children's Memorial Hospital, and he needed a $50,000 fundraiser in order to release that money. That's beyond
petty.
Well, it's not just beyond petty. I mean, it's criminal. We elect these people. The difference, he's talking about people doing outsized sentences for nonviolent crimes. If there's a violence against the rule of law, a violence by people who make the rules of law, that's the issue. It's not about. He didn't have any power and he tried to take advantage of something. He had the ultimate power and used it in a corrupt way.
I had a lot of lines from him, bro. One of them was persecution masquerading as prosecution. So if anybody thought that he would turn a cheek, he did not. Gia is sitting in our studio, yeah. too. You were at every day of the first trial, right?
Yes, the first trial, which was a huge setback for the feds. You know, that was a trial that they felt that was a slam dunk. I mean, if you remember back then, it was an electric time. It was because those tapes, the release of those tapes, which were so astonishing and scandalous. And, of course, as Ro mentioned, the one that was really difficult to get over was withholding the money from sick children at the Children's Hospital. That was even the most shocking, even beyond just the trying to sell the Senate seat and the racetrack, withholding money from there as well.
And when you play back those tapes in your head or on the radio, and then juxtapose that to what you just heard today, which Steve is right, sounded like a guy who was contrite in tone, if not in word. It's hard to reconcile the two because he is scheming,
but he
on
has
those tapes.
Always had a deep desire to be adored. I mean, he was unbelievably charismatic. Yeah, I mean, that's why the jurors couldn't make up their mind in the first trial.
And John, I wouldn't use the word contrite in describing him. I mean, I did say genuine, I think, perhaps, but I mean, I think what he said was maybe heartfelt, but I don't think it was a sign of contrition.
Well, he didn't say I was sorry.
No, and I don't think he ever will. You're noticing now that that's a well-worn political tactic, never to give up, no matter what.
No.
You know, don't ever acknowledge that you made a mistake here. And he didn't. And it's surprising to me, because had he done that, I think, prior to sentencing, because, he fought it all the way through that sentencing hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think had he been contrite, and I know, because you were there all the time and you went to law school, I truly believe that he would not have gotten banged with 14 years had he taken responsibility.
I think definitely he always felt confident, but also that was paired with him being so charismatic. And we saw that again in this speech. I was surprised. I know that he had that one moment of being overcome with emotion, but it was still a polished. He still did it in a very polished way. And he was also incredibly inspirational. And I think that's what you were going towards in saying somewhat like a campaign speech.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny because, well, he didn't say he was sorry. There was some emotion there, but no contrition. And the quoting of Scripture was interesting to me, too.
You could speak to this. I think I know I've been in his presence when I've had conversations with him, and I knew he was lying to my face.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and he's saying it with a straight face.
But he was really good at it.
He was really good at it, but I just knew it was not true.
Well, I got the first interview with him after he won that night. And at Finkelsteel, when he was coming off the stage, we were able to get a live interview with him. And he's always been a charismatic guy. He was doing Elvis that night. I mean, he's an entertainer.
Right.
Men and women who can do this well, right, who can be entertaining while they're on the campaign trail, they do very well. And he was always good at that, but that's really not the issue. And I think, Steve, you make a really excellent point. When you listen to those tapes and you hear the difference between the public Rod Blagojevich and then the Rod Blagojevich when he didn't think anybody was listening, very different characters.
How about it?
Yeah, and wouldn't
it?
You say he's on a public campaign now?
Sure.
To do what?
And I think he wants something out of this. I don't know that he can't run for office in the state of Illinois.
No, he could run for Congress, though.
There is a theory that he can run for Congress.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure that they would attempt to be blocked. But that could be tested. But this is for sure a way to say to the Trump world, whether it's the Trump supporters or people within the White House. He name-checked Jared Kushner.
How about
at
that?
One point here.
Shout out to Jared.
Yeah. I think what he's doing is he's trying to set up a plan. I mean, listen, the family has struggled with money forever, right? Because he was, even when he was governor. Because he wasn't, even though he was attempting, he wasn't successful in you know, really being able to game the system for a lot of money. We don't really know for sure whatever came out of the campaigns, but we know that he did not live, you know, an incredibly, you know, crazy rich life. So the question now becomes, where does he go from here? And I think he is going to be an absolute darling of the Trump reelection campaign crowds. He's going to be out there, the MAGA world.
I said that he's going to be he'll be the warm-up act, don't you think?
We are out of time, guys, but when you said that, Steve, I said I'll eat your hat if that happens. After this speech, I'm going to eat your hat. Hey, Ro, we'll listen for you this afternoon.
Thanks.
G, you're right around the corner.